Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
Jonathan de Burke Butler is here to bring us stories from other parts of the world. Jonathan,
Sean,
good afternoon.
How are you getting on?
The Netherlands we're going to first. Now, this is a story about a cartoon contest being cancelled, but as we know from not too long ago, cartoon contests can have fairly fatal results sometimes.
Absolutely, and that's what I think the main protagonist in this particular story has taken into account. At least that's what he says he has done. This is Geert Wilders, who we haven't spoken about for a while, actually. Mm. We kind of left him alone on this slot when his PVV party didn't do as well as they expected to do, although they did gain more seats in last year's election by five. I think they got five more seats in last year's election, but they didn't do as well as expected. And he's been relatively quiet, I suppose, but he was going to run a cartoon contest, a Prophet Muhammad cartoon contest, and you can imagine it wasn't going to be too complimentary given his own views of Islam. He was going to host this in November, but he has now decided that he is not going to bother anymore. He called it off to avoid the risk of victims of Islamic violence, to quote him, and he noted that his point, but still noted that his point about the intolerant nature of Islam has been proved again by this. That's to quote him. Now, you could say it's in either way, whether this had gone ahead or not, it's still a win for Wilders.
Mm.
Okay, because it, in many ways,
well,
he gets to prove what he sees
yeah.
as his point.
Yeah.
Okay, and the extent of the protest against this actually went all the way over to Pakistan. So there were actually protests in cities and towns across Pakistan, which were organised by a small but increasingly influential party, a party by the name of Tehreek-e-Labbaik. They have, in the last year, 18 months, been responsible for numerous protests across the country, which have been quite successful, it should be said. And it appears that these protests in Pakistan may have had some sort of influence on Wilders. But as I said, he got his point across.
And the nature of the death threat, were they very specific? Because so I assume he gets threats all the time.
He gets threats all the time. Now, that should be said. And that was one of the things. He, of course, was very quick to say that it was actually nothing to do with him at all, and that he would have carried on, but he was worrying about others. But you're right to point that out. There was a 26-year-old man who was apprehended, I believe, by police last week, and they're saying that this was as a direct result of him pushing ahead with this contest.
Right.
It also comes off the back, if I remember rightly, wasn't last weekend, weren't there two people attacked in a train station, in two American tourists, I think, were attacked in Amsterdam, stabbed,
yeah.
and the attacker was shot. So again, there's tension in that part of the world, there's tension in the Netherlands, and he's exploiting it.
Yeah. Right, Cambodia we're going to go to next. This is a story about an Australian filmmaker being sent to prison for espionage.
Yeah, espionage for who is the question. I mean, when the sentence was sent down and he was given a 6-year sentence, no mention of any country that he was spying for was made. Although in other reports at one point, Australia was mentioned. Now, that said, this particular characters. Man, the name is James Ricketson. He's a 69-year-old filmmaker. He's been making films for a long time, and I believe he's either been living or he has certainly worked for a long time in Cambodia. Now, this is not the first time that he was sentenced. In 2014, he was sentenced to 2 years in prison, but they were suspended. So he's been on the regime's radar for quite a number of years, and he keeps, shall we say, putting it up to them. Okay, he's very much a civil rights activist, and he was caught last year, in June of last year, sending a drone over a protest march which was being held by the Cambodian National Rescue Party. This is the party that was outlawed late last year, I think it was, which meant that the dictatorship of Hun Sen, effectively is a dictatorship even though they have elections, was able to return with a majority of 150, as in every seat in Parliament, because there was no opposition. Indeed. But anyway, Ricketson, as I said, has been a thorn in the side of the regime, and they finally sent him to prison, where we assume he will spend the next 6 years.
Mm. And And but are they saying specifically what he did that was supposed to lead this espionage, or can they just leave it as vague as that?
They're not giving any specific reasons for what he did. There's no specific charges, I should say. And his lawyer has even said that there was hardly any evidence here. Now, his lawyers are hoping that he might get a pardon from the king. There appears to be a pattern with Hun Sen. So he's been in power for 33 years and he'll get another 5. And what happens basically is he clamps down on free speech and press and all that kind of thing, throws people in jail. The US and the EU clamp down and put sanctions on him, and then he goes, okay, well, I'll let them out, and he gets the king to issue pardons. Okay. So the lawyer is hoping that Mr. Ricketson might get a pardon out of this, but I have to say, judging from his record, I think he might spend a bit of time in jail.
Has the Australian government said anything?
They have been very quiet about this. I think there was the media asked a question of the new prime minister there, who was, I think, in Indonesia recently, and he said that people needed to be patient. So maybe he knows something that's happening in the back channels, but it remains to be seen.
Right. Okay. Yeah. It's eerily similar to the Myanmar story as well, given that, you know.
Absolutely.
Journalists get in jail for saying uncomfortable things. Right. We're going to go next to Guatemala, and the president has shut down an anti-corruption commission. Now, why would he do that?
It's a good question. So a bit of a backstory here is, we know there was a civil war in Guatemala between 1960 and 1996 when the peace deal was signed. 10 years after the peace deal was signed, the UN, with the help of the judiciary really in Guatemala, set up a commission called the International Commission Against Impunity in Guatemala. That's been there since 2006. And their office, shall we call it, has been renewed every couple of years ever since then. But Jimmy Morales, who is this comedian turned president, he was elected by a huge majority in 2015, something like 73%, I think, announced on Friday that he's shutting it down. Now, he said that he was going to do it immediately, but since that statement was made, there was a spokesperson came out and said, well, we'll let them see out this particular mandate until September of next year. Okay, so you asked at the start why, and that's probably what we should answer. Morales has been investigated himself by this international commission with the help of the Supreme Court. And in fact, a couple of days before he issued the statement saying that he was shutting it down, there was a decision made by the Supreme Court to allow a request to be brought by the commission and prosecutors to strip him of his immunity from prosecution.
Oh dear. Is there any detail that says precisely what it is they're investigating?
They're investigating in 2015, when he was running for president, having had no political experience whatsoever, they believe took about $1 million and put it in his pocket that he shouldn't have taken. So it's a fairly clear, they believe anyway, it's a fairly clear case. The problem for Jimmy Morales is that these guys are lethal. They have a really good record of getting the people they go after.
Yeah.
There's a couple of ex-presidents that, and I think the president who came before, was it Otto Perez Molina? He's in prison at the moment, as far as I know, because these guys went after him. So.
And Morales kind of ran on that kind of, I've no political experience, clean, you know, new broom and all that kind of stuff.
His moniker was not corrupt nor a thief.
Yeah.
And it appears he's both.
Oh dear. So he does have the power to... He can't shut down this UN commission. Does that mean they can't operate anymore? And he's off the hook.
Well, they'll be operating until September of 2019. Now, I don't know what channels they can take to try and keep things open. I know the Supreme Court seems to act with them in an awful lot of cases to protect them. I know he's tried things before. Last year, he tried to kick out the head of the organisation, Ivan Velasquez, and the Supreme Court put a stop to that. So I don't know if there's other things that they can do to get the... I suppose they get rid of them, get a new government, and then renew the mandate again. Is probably the best bet.
Right, okay. Okay, we're going to go to China next, or is this
Tahiti?
It's
Tahiti,
and China.
Yeah, really, it's Tahiti, really. So this, a couple of months ago, Back in February, the Chinese diplomats who were operating in French Polynesia were told to vacate the premises that they had been renting since 2007.
Yeah, I think you mentioned this before.
I did indeed. Now it's come to a conclusion. Yeah. So the landlady, a woman by the name of Ava Bitten, she started an online petition asking China to get out of her house, basically. And they have, it would appear, said yes. So that particular diplomatic dispute goes down as a loss, I suppose, for China. Right. But so they're going to have to move house.
Okay, and to remind people, the reason why she wanted them out, were China terrible tenants? Were they leaving cans all over the sitting room?
I believe she just wanted her house back, as far as I know, and the lease was up. Well, the lease was up. Now they had turned it into an office, and part of the problem that she had with it was it's a kind of an old colonial style house, and they had put satellite dishes and all sorts of things outside it, which she wasn't very happy about. So they even offered to buy it off her, and she said, "No, I want me gaff back.
I want me gaff back." Right? Okay. Egypt, we're going to go to next now, and this is claims that Coptic Christians have been attacked.
Yes. I suppose it's not a massive story, without downplaying it, but I just think it's something that is we'd probably need to watch out for as time goes on. So this is three people were injured in an attack on Coptic Christians in a village in an area of Upper Egypt called Minya. Okay, it's a city populated by about 250,000 people. It's about 250 kilometres south of Cairo, and the population are mainly Coptic Christians, right? Now, out of the Egyptian population, the majority, of course, Muslims, but about 15 to 20% are Coptic Christians. And every now and again, they face problems. Okay, so about 5 years ago, there was a church burned down in the same part of in the same part of Egypt, and this attack is the latest thing that's happened. So as I said, I suppose it's not a massive story, but it's just something to watch out for as things develop in that part of the world.
And the Coptic Christian population in Egypt is particularly large. I assume they've been there for an awfully long time.
As far as I know, it's one of the oldest Christian churches in the world.
Right,
and it's very, very different. I mean, they differentiate themselves as being pre-Arab Egyptians.
Right.
So they see themselves as being very, very different.
Yeah. The I think actually technically Arabs aren't, or Egyptians aren't Arabs. But that's, you know, that's probably another day's discussion. Are these attacks happening out of a sense that, you know, what's the motivation for them? Is there a kind of sense that somehow Christians are conspired against the state, or is it just general animosity to people from other religions?
I think it's a mixture of that, but also I think Coptic Christians were seen as being involved in the El-Sisi's ouster. So when Mohamed Morsi was kicked out and El-Sisi came in, they're seen to sort of support El-Sisi because Morsi would have been seen as more radical, I suppose. But that might be part of it. But this has been going on for years with Coptic Christians, should be said, on and off. But they've never been fully embraced in Egypt as such.
Right, South Africa we're going to go to now, and this is a story about white workers are going on strike.
Yes, a large petrochemical company called Sasol, okay, based in Johannesburg, or just outside Johannesburg. It has depending on who you read, between 26,000 and 30,000 workers, okay, working for it. Many of them are working in a cooling plant to the north of Johannesburg. Now, Sasol a while back said that they were going to open a share ownership scheme, right? But they were offering it exclusively to black people, to black workers.
Okay.
They said that they wanted to bring their quota of ownership up to 25%. So that 25% of black workers in Sasol would own the company.
Okay.
So they're kind of forced to do that because there is a quota system that companies in South Africa have to adhere to, okay, under the current government. Now, there is a trade union called Solidarity. It is a mainly white trade union. And they, yesterday, in fact, started striking. They started to go slow yesterday in this cooling plant north of Johannesburg. saying that basically this share ownership scheme was racist and it excluded them. They're saying that they're going to ramp up the protests or the strike on Thursday, and it's going to be a full-blown strike on Thursday. So this, when they announced this story, when they announced this last week, it wasn't a big story. Like, if you were looking on Google for this, you wouldn't find it. But it's gradually
building momentum,
and people are taking notice of it now.
And this seems to be within the wider context of the fact that the vast majority of the wealth in South Africa is still owned by a small amount of white people.
Yeah,
essentially.
Yes.
The current government and previous governments haven't done a great job in trying to spread that wealth around a bit.
Yes, that's it in a nutshell, I think.
Yes. Right, and Australia, finally, we're going to go to the Rent-A-Grave scheme. I'd love to know how this comes to an end, this scheme.
Well, so it's in New South Wales, and under the Cemeteries and Crematoria Act, which was passed in June, relatives could rent graves for between 25 and 99 year periods if they couldn't afford the leasehold fees on their loved one's permanent grave. So apparently graves are very expensive in Australia, very expensive here, between €2,000 and €3,000. So what they were offering was that you could rent the grave, you get a headstone put on there, but when the term came up, if you didn't pay, I think you had 2 years to kind of renew, if you didn't pay, they'd take the headstone off, they'd take the bones out, they'd put them into a bone room, effectively, and would make space for somebody else to be buried there.
Right, okay. And you can rent it for 25 years?
Between 25 and 99 years.
But you're after 99 years. Who are they going to come after? The people who rented it are probably gone as well.
You have a point.
Very, very odd. Right, so what should we look out for over the coming week, Jonathan?
Yeah, there's a few things to look out for. I think one thing that's interesting, tomorrow the US Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, is going to visit Pakistan. We expect him to get a fairly cold welcome, given that they just withdrew $300 million in aid. Now, I know the Palestinian aspect of that got an awful lot of coverage, but the Pakistan one didn't.
Yeah.
So that mightn't go too well. Macron is in Luxembourg to meet Benelux leaders to discuss the EU future, so you can expect a few statements on Brexit and all the like during the week. And then on Sunday there are parliamentary elections in Sweden. The Social Democrats will be expected to hang on there, but the Swedish Democrats, who would be similar to Mr. Wilders, are expected to also do well. So, watch this space.
Jonathan, thanks a million for coming into us. Jonathan de Burke Butler there. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.